awesome. Love that. Oh my goodness. Well, for one thing, I want to acknowledge also that we have a new musician with the band today. He's new to us. It's Margaret's son, Quest, right? And he's playing guitar and bass. It's wonderful. And you know, you guys know that Chris is probably a kind of a hard act to follow, right? Because he's been playing here for years and he knows the routine really well. And Margaret came in looking like this, and as I came onto the stage and she was playing a premature version of I Release and I Let Go, I remember this this time I was at my niece's wedding. I wasn't doing the wedding because they're Catholic, and there was a Catholic priest there, and he said to the bride and the groom and all of the ushers and all of the bridesmaids, "There are no mistakes, only memories." This is in Texas. So, Margaret, there are no mistakes, only memories. And that microphone popping at precisely the right time is a memory that I will treasure. Proving that love has a sense of humor, and so should we, right? Cool. So, funny that love has a sense of humor, because today I'm speaking about faith. And the name of my talk is Not Your Normal Faith. One of the reasons I thought of this title is because of a comment that somebody made in class one time. You know, we're sort of radical here. We goof around a lot and we have a lot of fun, and it's up-leveled a bit in classes, and we were goofing around about something, and one of the attendees in the class just looked at me and she said, "Bonnie, I gotta find a normal church one of these days." And it filled me with delight that she thought that. You know, I would think that a lot of religions don't really think that this denomination is a normal church. And it may not be, really. But who wants to be normal? You know, I think it's because, for one thing, we bless all paths to God, and there are some churches that do that, but not all churches do that. But we celebrate all paths to God and name them all as valuable and vital and important. And the other thing is that when I've spoken to a lot of people here that have had pasts in different religious traditions, and it seems like a lot of religious traditions in more traditional way are about telling people what is wrong with them, how they are sinners, and how they can move out of sin and possibly get into heaven if they want. Richard Rohr says you have to learn how to buy fire insurance. go to hell. And we're quite the opposite here. We're affirming that even our imperfections are perfect in their own way, and we are affirming the innate worthiness of all beings everywhere, everyone and every being, guinea pigs, rabbits, all every being is worthy, flowers, trees, all of that. And the reason that we can do that is because we recognize that everything is one with God, and we are one with God. So to some religions, that would seem like that's not quite a normal way to think, but it is a beautiful way to go through life. In the picture of this denomination, though, I would say that this church, Ventura Center for Spiritual Living, a center of love where we learn to be love, share love, and serve love, that this church isn't exactly a normal science of mind church, in case you haven't noticed. For one thing, we have bunnies. I think we're the only church in the movement that adopted bunnies, and I'm still trying to figure out why, but we did, and they're here, and they're going to be our little teachers of goodwill, and we'll get around to why they're here for a reason. But the other thing is that a lot of, and I think more churches are sort of coming around to this perspective, but a lot of the old science of mind teaching used to be about what can I manifest, what can I get from the universe by doing principle correctly, and in this center we seem to be more into mystery, into recognizing that there is an absolute reality of wholeness, and our spiritual work is to let go of that which stands as a barrier to wholeness and move into that wholeness in a surrendered position. And as people that move into wholeness and surrender, I would say that one of the differences in this center from other centers is that our faith is strong enough and big enough and powerful enough to acknowledge doubt. Has anybody here ever doubted? Ever doubted that your prayer would... Oh, just Margaret. Yeah. Yeah. Ever doubted that your prayer would work, or that things would turn out the way that you wanted, or that life was going away the way that it should, right? So we're big enough to acknowledge doubt, and that's a beautiful thing. And we'll talk about why that's a beautiful thing in just a moment. But right now I want to hear from somebody who in her own life was big enough to acknowledge doubt, and that is one of our beautiful practitioners, Sue Cable.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm going to start by telling you how I came to this center. In 2004, my mom committed suicide, and the church that I went to at that time told me my mom was in hell. And I knew that that was not my truth, and that was not the faith that I believed in. So I had no faith and no God at that time, and that puts me into deep depression. I have to have a higher power, and I have to have hope. In 2009, I was in this really deep depression, still stemming from the death of my mom. And the internet, of all places, helped me find this center. What I typed in was spiritual and meditation, and this place came up. The first time I came, I didn't understand. You are the face of God, and so it is. I am remembering, but I knew that this was home. So now I'm going to fast forward to last year, 2017. It was a very rough year, and excuse me if I cry. It was a very rough year for Dave and I. In January, we lost our 15-year-old dog, Ren. He had had a great life. He was a rescue, and I knew that I had given him so much. 3 weeks later to the day, our very special Rottweiler, Norma, was diagnosed with bone cancer. Norma was very special. She actually, her first year, she was in the Christmas Eve play here. She was a love on a leash therapy dog. She went into the nursing homes and people cried to see her. She gave so much in her short time here. She was such a gentle soul, and she was just our baby. For the next 7 months, we did everything physically, mentally, and spiritually possible to make a difference in her life. It's the first time in my life I had the opportunity to do that with someone that had cancer. We had her leg amputated, the one that had cancer. She had chemo. We made all of her foods. We made all of her treats. I met experts in the field. I did research. She had her own Facebook page, and she had followers from around the world that prayed for her. And the Facebook page wasn't, it was about finding a good thing in every day that we traveled this adventure with cancer, of finding a gift. My great friend and spiritual healer, Lita, would come over and do energy work on her. She put Norma's picture in a special frame from God, John of God, and surrounded it with crystals. She prayed daily for Norma. I played healing music. And my point of telling you all this is that I did everything spiritually, mentally, and physically possible to try to make a difference. I placed my hands on her daily, and I prayed from that place of absolutely knowing 100% that I have the power of God and that I was making a difference. Isn't that what I was taught as a practitioner? Well, none of it worked, and none of it extended her life. And I lost Norma exactly 1 year ago today. When Bonnie asked me to speak, we didn't realize that this would be the exact day. So I don't think it's a coincidence. But in losing Norma, I lost my faith and my hope again, and I was broken. And again, when I say, when I have no faith and no hope in a God or a higher power, it leads to depression. And of course, that meant for me, instead of coming here where all of you were, that would support and love me, I did the opposite. I went into isolation. How could I, being a practitioner, stand up during prayer? How could I pray for others when I no longer believed that it made a difference? So out of the blue, Reverend Bonnie called me for something just out of the blue. And in talking to me, she realized I need some love, and she invited me to TA a class with her. And during this class, Reverend Bonnie was speaking about the third force. And I decided to go way outside my comfort zone and expose my real self. I asked in front of the class about how the third force could help with my lack of faith. So Reverend Bonnie invited me to hold my lack of faith in one hand and the wanting my old faith in the other hand, and not to judge, but just to let it be and see what reconciling factor would happen. So I did just that in the following week. It was March 23rd, and it was the anniversary of my mom's death. And I took both Ren and Norma's ashes to my very special sacred place to scatter them. And I knew that day that I would find what I needed to find. So that day I watched as a hawk took a fish out of the river and thought about Mother Nature and the circle of life. And I'm sure you've heard that before. It was a good day for the hawk, but not so much for the fish. The lesson for me was that Norma was the fish and that I could be the hawk. I was nurtured by this gift. I had learned so much about cancer, about tripods, about amputations of dog's legs, and about the importance of diet. I was already being asked to support and help others in the same situation, and that was the gift that Norma left me, besides all the love that she shared in her time here. She was a warrior. She was my warrior princess. And how could I be anything less than a warrior on cancer for her? On that day, I felt some closure and some peace. I also realized on that day that I don't want my old faith back. It didn't work for me. So I am building a new faith with the help of this community. I'm back. This community is the glue that holds me together. And it also picks up the pieces when I feel broken. And today I am fine with being a work in progress. I love you all. I thank you for being my glue. Namaste, and so it is.
So I remember the day in class, so I hope it's okay that I talk about this. I think it is because you just said it, but I remember the day in class when there were, I don't know, 40 people in that class. It was a big class. We were all sitting around in a circle, and Sue, one of the practitioners on duty, raised her hand and said, I just want to tell you, I have no faith. And my reaction was to start laughing, which is not the kindest reaction in the world, but I'll explain why in a moment. First of all, I laughed because I admired her courage. How courageous it is to be a practitioner and to be in a faith community and say, you know, I'm struggling with my faith right now. How authentic that is. And shining the light of truth on our struggles is how we transcend our struggles. But the other reason I laughed is I knew that something was dissolving within her. Some ego thing that had a grip on her old faith was dissolving. And her willingness to let go and her willingness to be in a new way, in a new place with the faith that she once had, to release it and allow something greater to come in, that this was the doorway to the infinite. And Sue, I think you have walked through that doorway, and I'm so honored because I love Norma so much. And what a gift she gave to you. What a gift she gave to all of us. Because, you know, we're talking about the spirit of ripples. Sue's rippling out from this gift that Norma gave her is helping dogs all over the world. And what she just shared in here helped all of us in some way. Because I'm willing to bet, even though Margaret Owens was the only one who raised her hand when I said that people sometimes struggle with doubt and with fear and wondering if our prayers are working, I'm willing to bet that every single person in here has doubts and has fears. And again, is our faith big enough to hold our doubts and our fears, to embrace it and transcend it? And what do we do when we know that we have doubts and fears within this thing that we call faith? One of the things that we believe in this center is that prayer works. And it does. It just may not work exactly the way that we think it works. I was pondering the question yesterday as I was wondering about this. What's that song? Raindrops keep falling on my head. Maybe not. I was pondering the question, is prayer a transaction? And if it is that a bad thing? I don't know. You know, one of the things that I learned when I took David Carrigan's Meister Eckhart class several years ago, this has always stayed with me. You know that scene in the Bible when Jesus comes and he kicks everybody's ass? right? in the money changer scene in the temple, right? And many people think that he did it because he was angry, but it doesn't actually say that he was angry. I mean, he made a whip, so that might be an indication. But Meister Eckhart said that he was just determined to drive out a certain consciousness, and that was the consciousness of transaction. That we can't really appreciate the temple of grace, the temple of that which is priceless, the pearl of great price, if we are in transactional consciousness. Nipun Mehta talks a lot about moving from transaction to trust. I think that as a society, we are very, very engaged in transaction. It's almost the way that we're wired, is that everything is a transaction. I'll do this, and then I'll get this result, right? When I think about, I think it has to do with anxiety and wanting to know the rules and wanting to know how things will turn out. Recently, because of our bunny rabbits, you know, I keep wondering why we got them and what's going on with that, but I've learned so much from them already. You know, you do anything like you do everything, or you do everything like you do anything. I'm not sure how that phrase goes, but I'm working with the bunny rabbits like I work with everything. And those of us that were on the bunny rabbit procurement team, that would be Sue and Deborah over there, we were working with several rescue groups, and it was really challenging. Now, I want to let you know that I have complete respect for animal rescue groups, but they are very, very strict, right? Have you ever encountered that, right? And we were doing lots of research on the internet. I was talking to my vet, had many conversations with him about the proper care and feeding of bunnies. And some of the animal rescue groups that we were working with had this strict list of rules that we needed to follow, one of which was the bunnies can't live outside. And we ended up finding somebody with the vision to know that her bunnies, rather than living in her rescue center that was basically living in a dark garage in a smaller cage, that her bunnies would be happier in this beautiful habitat that was built by Brock and Jeff over there, that they would be happier there, and we ended up getting the bunnies. But you see what I'm talking about. There is this transactional thing that these are the rules, and if I follow them, then everything will happen. If I follow these rules about rabbits, then nothing bad will happen to the rabbit. If I follow these rules about my life, then nothing bad will happen to me. That's what we cling to, and that's what we hope for, and that is a transaction, and we can move past that. We do that with prayer, too. Has anyone here ever, particularly if you're a practitioner or in one of the classes, you know, I have to do the five steps or else the prayer is not going to work, right? Just you, just Patty, okay. Oh, that's a shame, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know. The other thing that we talk a lot about here, too, is that from the teachings of Jesus that Ernest Holmes quoted frequently, is that it is done unto you as you believe. So if something doesn't work out, if something negative happens, if something that you don't like happens, is it because you didn't believe properly? Is it because you didn't believe enough? Is it because your belief was not aligned rightly? And that's a difficult place to be. We often shame ourselves and humiliate ourselves thinking that we haven't believed properly or we haven't prayed properly or we left out the third step and everything runs amok. When really, really what we're doing with that is, again, engaging in that transactional consciousness, and there is something so much better. I'm not saying don't pray the five steps. It's a beautiful tool, but pray the five steps in a way that aligns you with that which is something better. And that something better is the constant an ongoing mindful courting of the truth of absolute reality in every single moment. It is the willingness to know that our faith is strong enough and big enough to embrace our doubt, and it is the willingness to know that our wholeness can encompass our brokenness or the brokenness of life. The wholeness that we hold in consciousness can embody and encompass and support the brokenness that we might see in life around us. It's what Sue was talking about when she found her faith. With the hawk and the fish. It's a bad day for the fish, but a good day for the hawk. There is a greater system of grace that holds everything that happens to us. And as we align ourselves with that thinking, I think that's what Ernest Holmes meant by right thinking, by prayer and by aligning ourselves with faith and with the greater yet to be, with revealing wholeness. When we align ourselves with that, then everything starts to be a celebration. Everything starts to work. Everything feels like love. And I've experienced it. I don't every day, all day. Or I do it every day, but I don't do it all day every day. Let's put it that way. But, you know, if you wonder how to experience this greater embodiment of wholeness and this greater awareness of wholeness, I think it's a lot of the things that we talk about in this center. It's welcoming everything. It's seeing that everything is a gift. You know, I often quote Krishnamurti, who was sitting around with his disciples, and the disciples were saying, "What is your secret, Krishnamurti? How are you enlightened?" And Krishnamurti said, "I don't mind what happens." Now, we know that Judy Pando minds what happens. Where is she? I have to do it. I have to tease her about minding what happens, because she did a talk about where she minded what happens. She's the only one who minds what happens, right? But I would say to for all of us, not only to not mind what happens, to celebrate what happens. There's a story about the Amish tradition. I don't remember where I read this, but it's been said that the Amish people, when they have a child that is differently abled, that they celebrate the birth of that child in a greater way. They consider it to be a great opportunity to go deep and express deeper love. And so when we have a situation in our life that is differently abled, when we have a condition in our bodies that is not what we want it to be, when we have a world that is struggling, that seems to be polarizing, what if all of that is part of wholeness? What if all of that is an opportunity for us to go so deep, to go deeper than we ever thought we could, and to rise up and hold a new vision, to hold a new vision of wholeness, to reveal wholeness? There is nothing to be healed, only wholeness to be revealed. And we are the revealers of that truth. All of you. You wake up to that. I know it's hot, but wake up to that idea that you are the revealers of truth in everything that happens, whether it's something that you name whole or whether it's something you name broken. The answer is always the same. Reveal the spiritual truth about it. And the spiritual truth is that this too is part of wholeness. This too is part of everything. We are whole, perfect, and complete. Perfect means inclusive of everything. We are not half perfect and complete, even though we want to be. We want to say only the good things are whole, when really the things that we label good and the things that we label bad are also whole. All of it. Everything. There is nothing outside the walls of wholeness. Everything exists within the walls of wholeness, because actually wholeness has no walls. Ah. Oh, thank you. Well, thank you, Margaret. Appreciate that. There are no mistakes, only memories. Wholeness has no holes. How's that? Wholeness has no walls, but I kind of like wholeness has no holes. How about that? Yeah. You put the hole in wholeness. No, kidding. Okay. All right. So, you know, you may be wondering how this works practically, and certainly I think what happens when we start focusing on wholeness is that we start to see it, and I think that the manifestation of wholeness is living like the truth of wholeness is true, and we witness wholeness through our witnessing of the connections that come up. The connections that I spoke of when I spoke about Sue's message about how even this thing that happened to her that was so devastating is rippling out and affecting and touching each of us and rippling out and touching people all over the world. The story that Hugh read about the Nipun's aunt that was in an accident, and how the uncle is helping people and those people go on to help other people. There is this web of interconnection that is always functioning, and if we can train our mind's eyes to see that, then that impacts our perception of wholeness, and everything, again, starts to seem like a celebration. We're not like Krishnamurti, who doesn't mind what happens. We're like us, who celebrate what happens. Good luck with that. I'll get back to you when I got that down pat, but I'm working on it. You know, and I'm going to pick an easy example from my life of celebration, and this has to do sort of with the fact that I've been running this church. I've been the senior minister of this church for about 14 and a half years now, and I still don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why we have bunnies. There are things that come up that surprise me all the time. I learn something new every week, and that's a really good thing. And right now, I don't know how we're supposed to be getting this message that's coming through me of greater kindness and greater recognition of wholeness and greater witnessing of the interconnections. I don't know how to get that out there. I don't know how to get people to do that, you know? I don't know how to get myself to do it, but I'm working on it. And sometimes I do things that I do not understand. So, for example, I was with this group from India. We did a long seven, eight weeks of conference calls, and one of them asked me to send her some pictures of my animals for her son. She lives in Dubai. And rather than keeping it simple and just sending her some nice email pictures, I said, I'm going to make a book for your son, and I'm going to get pictures from some of the other people in India, and I'm going to put esoteric poetry with it. And so I did, and it took hours and hours and weeks of work trying to wrangle all these people, getting their animal photos in and picking out the right poems and then working with the various programs and making it work. And then I brought it to the place where I needed to ship it, and do you know how much it costs to send stuff to India, Dubai, Turkey, Japan, all over the world? Some went to the States, but a lot of them went far away, so I was spending a ton of money. And all the time I'm going, why? Why? What was I thinking? Why? Yeah, I agree. I agree. Why? Why? And then we finished up. I was working with a guy at UPS who is a Sikh. You know, Sikh, they wear the turbans. Ronnie, who works across the street in the Asian market, is a Sikh as well. And I thought, you know, I'm going to talk to him. He's from India, and I'm going to talk to him about Nipun Mehta coming to our church. And of course, I do what I do. I'm like, oh, God, he's going to think like you're a fundamentalist and you're proselytizing and you're trying to convert him. So I went up to him very apologetically, and I said, I am not trying to convert you. I promise you. I just really want you to know about this guy from India that's coming to my church, and in my church we are really open. And he goes, stop right there. I'm like, oh, crap, what did I do? And he goes, I think all religions are the same. And I started explaining our religion again and who Nipun was and how he might enjoy it. And he goes, stop right there. I think that kindness is very much like the Sikh tradition, where we have five things that we are supposed to do. And if you do those five things, you will be automatically kind. Might be nicer if I wasn't speaking in a fake Indian accent, by the way. But I can't help it. I'm a mimic. I can't help it. So don't get me started. But the conversation went like that, and he told me, he assured me that if he was not working that Sunday, he would come to the church. And the thing is that, you know, he'll come to the church, and I am assuming that the message that he hears will affect his life, and he will ripple out to affect other lives. And maybe that's why I made those incredibly expensive, hardworking books. It may not have anything to do with this little boy in Dubai. I mean, I'm sure he'll like it, but it may have something to do with connecting with this man, the Sikh man, who is coming to the church, possibly, and rippling out the message of this beautiful community to all people. And the truth is that everything that we do with the right intention, everything we do with the intention of kindness and sharing and compassion, everything that we do with that intention has the capacity to ripple and change the world. So if you feel like you don't have faith in prayer, or you don't have faith in religion, or you don't have faith in transaction, or faith in life, have faith in what I just said. Have faith that your small acts are powerful, that your small acts ripple, that your small acts illuminate the connection that is the truth of our existence always. So look at something in your life that feels like you're struggling, and see if there is a way that you can possibly release the need for transaction and move into a greater trust. Move into greater compassion for yourself. See if you can stop shaming yourself for having something that's going wrong. See if you can stop shaming yourself for not having enough faith or enough know-how or enough this or that. And then move into that place to know that there is a small act of kindness waiting to happen through you or to you that will make a difference, that will make a huge difference. And as you move into that place for yourself, know that you are also doing this work for others. I'm going to close with a quote from Nipun Mehta. Imagine holding a space of compassion for all of the living beings in your sphere of influence. And now imagine the potential of all living beings doing the same for each other. It's an amazing world we live in. Let's reveal wholeness. Let's be part of that grace that is omnipresent. Let us pray.